Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Sunday Take for April 5th, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. I hope you're enjoying a nice, quiet Easter Passover weekend with family. And maybe there's a brunch on the agenda today. But anyway, a little weather. We're all waiting for spring. And Easter is one of those pieces that gets us there. Next weekend's Masters always also gets us in the mood for a little spring, seeing the blooms at Augusta. And so hopefully the spring comes sooner and we get some long stretches of warmer weather. The legislature comes back Tuesday, and we're going to talk about kind of what are the issues, how do we get there, how do they land this plane and get some things done in Tim Walz's last session with a tie in the House and one seat difference in the Senate. And the biggest issue is the tax bill. Why is the tax bill going to be important? Well, the first reason is Hennepin County Medical Center. HCMC needs some funding. They need a permanent dedicated source. Extending the sales tax, expanding the sales tax in Hennepin County would divert money from the Twins Stadium, generate more revenue, and have that dedicated to HCMC and North Memorial, two hospitals that have statewide implications because of the services they provide and who they serve. So that's going to be, I think, one of the biggest linchpins of the tax bill, which we may talk about in the take later. But when we come back, we're going to talk about what can the legislature still get done? What is possible? What needs to get done in an election year with all 201 legislative seats on the ballot? Tim Walz's last session. When they come back Tuesday, what could they possibly get done that might be a surprise? I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. First guest this week on Sunday Take is Republican leader in the House, Harry Nisca. Harry, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy Easter, Blois, and happy Easter to all your listeners.
Happy Easter to you, too. Let's start with you've had a week of recess for the Easter Passover holiday. What did you hear from constituents? What do you, where do you think if the legislature is a football game, are we at the 50 or are we at a different yard line? And are we marching in the right direction to get some things done this year?
Well, the main things I hear from people when I'm back in the community are that they're really concerned about affordability and they're concerned about accountability. They're concerned about the ways in which Minnesota has looked like an embarrassment to the rest of the country, especially this out-of-control fraud that we've seen in Minnesota. They want to know what we're going to do about that to hold people accountable who haven't done their jobs right. And what are we going to do to lower the cost for Minnesotans, especially the cost that they've seen recently? Obviously, there are factors that are beyond our control as Minnesota policymakers, but the cost of government, the cost of things like license tabs, the property tax bills that folks are seeing, those are the things that I'm hearing about from people when I'm in the community. You know, as far as where we are at, I sure hope we are going to be more productive in the second half of session than we have been in the first half of session. There are a lot of things that we have talked about at the legislature that should have bipartisan support. There was a bipartisan passed Office of Inspector General bill that was passed through the Senate last year, but has been held up in the House, mostly because until just recently, Democrats in the House were opposed to two things that we think are important features of that watchdog organization: having real independence from the governor and having real teeth to the office in the form of law enforcement power. We did get some movement on that right before break as we headed to our first and second committee deadlines. We were able to get that through committee. And now that needs to get over the finish line. But there are a lot of other common sense things that we should be able to come together on as a legislature that haven't happened yet. And hopefully we can as we face the deadline for us to adjourn at the end of May.
One of the things that obviously happens is a lot of behind the scenes negotiation at the end between leaders of both parties and the governor's office, and obviously in your case with the Senate. Have any of those conversations started to take shape, and things like a tax bill, the bonding bill, are those ready to start digging in on, or is there still some pre-work that probably has to be done on both those things?
Well, it's human nature that a lot of times things move quickly when deadlines are in play, and we are for the, things like the tax and the bonding bill. Typically, those things are things that are left to the very end of the legislative session. So there obviously have been discussions, the preliminary work around issues related to that. And a lot of times the actual movement happens towards the end when deadlines are looming. There are some things beyond that that we really should be moving forward on earlier. Things like trying to make sure that our state laws are in compliance with federal law on issues like Medicaid and SNAP, so that we don't lose billions of dollars of federal money by being out of compliance with federal law. A lot of these things, I'll be honest, have been frustrating. They haven't been moving as quickly as things should when we're talking about, items where there should be bipartisan support. School safety is another example. There are bipartisan things that we could agree on with respect to school safety. Democrats seem to not be interested in moving forward on those unless, the Republicans agree to things that Republicans don't think are good policy in that area.
One of the things, obviously, with school safety, Democrats will point to guns. There's members of your caucus who have been open to the discussion, but obviously the votes aren't there to pass new restrictions on firearms. Is that even more challenging in light of an election year where your members have to get endorsed, they have to go through the party process, and that's a core issue within the Republican Party that activists are pretty loud and solid on?
Well, I think that we are dealing with the overhang of an election with everyone at the Capitol, right? Every single office in the executive branch and in the legislative branch in Minnesota is up for election this year. And that's that's certainly a factor on both sides of the aisle, in both the executive branch and the legislative branch. We have 201 legislative seats up for election. We have, four executive branch seats up for election, and that election is going to be a big choice for the people of Minnesota, what direction they want to go. Do they want to continue the growth of a government that we've seen doubling the size of our state budget in a decade, or in all the economic ramifications that go with that, or are they going to choose a different direction? Obviously, that's a big factor.
My guest is Harry Niska. He's the Republican leader in the tied Minnesota House. We're talking about, as legislators come back from a week off, what needs to still get done this session, and is there progress to be made? You talked earlier about affordability. There's obviously some things within government's control, like property taxes, like license tap fees, that are definitely talkers right now. One of the other issues is just the national economy. Gas prices, things that are out of your control, things that but are on the national stage. And, you know, President Trump is going to, it's a midterm. He's not popular with, you know, independent voters. Are there things that you feel Republicans need to get out ahead of before November, issues that they need to drive the discussion on so they don't get defined by Democrats on a national level?
Well, I think the reality is when you look at the economy, Minnesota's economy has been lagging behind the rest of the country. We started in a great spot, right? Minnesota has always been had a great workforce. We've had this great cluster of especially large businesses headquarters in Minnesota, but we've fallen behind it over the past couple of decades. We've been consistently falling behind, and the jobs report that we just saw shows that again. Minnesota has traditionally been a low unemployment state. We are lagging behind the rest of the country as it does as the rest of the country improves, sees its job situation improve. Minnesota's job situation is falling behind. So I think it's really important for Minnesotans to understand that, to look at those factors, to look at GDP growth, per capita GDP growth. Minnesota is falling behind. Look at out migration of our most productive Minnesotans. And Minnesotans have to ask why. Why is the rest of the country's economy rebounding and Minnesota is not fully participating in that? That is an important question, and if Minnesota voters don't think about how state policy differs from federal policy and how state policymakers differ from federal policymakers, I think we might end up making a huge mistake here in Minnesota in 2026.
One of the big factors we're watching closely is retirements. They're split fairly evenly between Democrats and Republicans. What's your sense of why people are leaving the legislature this year? Is it age? Is it culture? Is it a variety of factors? And as you've been out talking to candidates who are running or recruiting candidates, what do you hear from them about either why they want to serve or, frankly, why they're hesitant to serve?
Well, I think every decision is an individual decision. Most of the decisions that I've heard about have been, a variety of personal reasons, types of reasons you're talking about. People get to a point in their career where they just decide to move on. And that's pretty typical. We have had a lot of long legislators in the last few election cycles have been kind of waves of those folks choosing to retire. I think that a lot of those who I talked to who looked at running in 2026, the biggest factor was about how important the 2026 election is for the future of our state. Again, we saw in 23 and 24 what happened when Democrats had a trifecta. They massively expanded the size and scope of state government. I think that really puts Minnesota in a very precarious, long-term, unsustainable position. When I talk to folks who are, choosing to run for statewide office or choosing to run for the legislature, for the most part, it's, there's a huge focus on what are we going to do to turn that around? And what are we going to do to bring accountability to state government where we've seen, billions of dollars of tax dollars flowing out of state government to fraudsters and criminals instead of going to the things that we as taxpayers would support paying for, taking care of the needy, taking care of our schools, making sure kids are actually learning instead of funding a bureaucracy, those types of things. The folks who are choosing to run as Republicans for the House are by and large laser focused on the importance of 2026 for the future of Minnesota.
You've been in behind the closed doors. This is Governor Walz's last session. He's not running again. There just has been a different kind of relationship with this governor and the legislature as before. As you come back this coming week, is there an engagement that would help get started sooner, or do you feel like the administration has been engaged on an issue like bonding or a supplemental budget that could help make progress rather than either A, waiting till the end, or B, you know, trying to use leverage just, you know, with the clock running out?
You know, I'll be honest, Governor Wallace has never, in my experience, been particularly engaged with Republicans. He has always, for the most part, mediated whatever he's trying to do and whatever his administration is trying to do through Democrat leaders at the legislature. And I'll just give you an example. Governor Wallace has never once reached out to me, never given me a phone call. I think I've had one conversation with him man to man in my life. That was on the first day of the legislative session when I first came in. His administration just doesn't reach out to Republicans by and large, and has never really been very engaged at the legislature. Not in the ways that previous governors have been.
Yeah, and that I didn't know that was going to be your answer, and I think that is telling. As you look forward to next year, no matter what the makeup of the legislature or the governor's office is, do you think there's a culture shift that could come next year, just based on who the chief executive is, whether you know it's a Republican or a Democrat?
I would say the two most likely people to get elected governor are people that I expect would bring a very different approach to the job.
Last question. Bonding. Is there a number in Republicans' mind that the bonding bill should be? And are you confident there'll be a bonding bill at the end of this session?
I wouldn't say that there's a specific number in mind so much as a focus in mind, which is if we are going to borrow state money, it needs to be laser focused on enduring infrastructure needs of the state, that, you know, the types of things that make sense to borrow money on. Certainly, the way that fits into our overall budget picture is the other big factor. Borrowing costs money, and we have money in the short term, but we are looking at a long-term structural deficit, and we have to be thinking about a structural imbalance, is the way that they call it in coming out of the budget office. The state government is spending more than it brings in, and so we need to be very, very careful about finding ways to find savings. We need to cut the fraud out of state government as a starting point. But if we're going to do capital investment, it has to be laser focused on roads, bridges, water treatment, the types of enduring infrastructure that is really going to make a difference for our state long term.
Leader Niska, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we have an event coming up, and I know it'll be a thoughtful and lively discussion. Have a great Easter.
Thanks, you too.
When we come back, Representative Matt Norris with the DFL perspective halfway through in a tied house. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule, automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's PRENUVO.com.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining me now is Representative Matt Norris. He is a Democrat. He represents northern suburbs. He's been in the legislature. This is his second term, but he's turned into one of the folks who's really trying, I think, from the DFL side to try to broker some bipartisan deals. And he joins me now on Sunday Take. Representative Norris, thanks for joining me.
It's great to be with you, boys.
Let's just start with you've been off for a week. I know you've been door knocking the district. What are you hearing at the doors? What are people talking about? And is there anything this legislature could do to help on any of the issues?
Mm-hmm. I'd say the biggest thing I'm hearing is affordability. Cost of living continues to be a real challenge for families, especially with gas prices up now again. So that's a big piece that I'm hearing. Kind of connected to that, a lot about property taxes as well. People have just got those statements in the mail recently. You talk about what are some things that the legislature could be doing. That's an example of where I do think there's some progress we could make. Chair Davids in the Taxes Committee and I have a bipartisan effort to try to create a property tax task force that would look at some of the tools we have at the state level to keep property taxes in line for especially middle income families. And that's, like I said, a bipartisan effort where I think there's a lot of consensus that we need to do something. And then I think ICE continues to be in the ICE surge earlier this year continues to be something I hear about on the doors. A lot of people still concerned about that and still feeling the impacts. That was something that hit a lot of families in a real personal way, people having to carry their passports with them or people they know having to do things like that or changing their daily activities. And so that's not something that's just going to fade as it leaves the headlines. I think it's something that will stick with a lot of Minnesotans for a long time.
Matt, as you talk about affordability, obviously there's macroeconomics, there's local economics. Leader Niska talked about, I think this is one of the more populist issues of the session, and that's license tab fees. And you bring up property taxes. Those have been hot topics. Do you expect there's any compromise there? You talk about a task force to look at property taxes, but is there anything in the short term that you think people should look at the legislature more aggressively on anything that really is a pocketbook issue?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of dynamics that are going to make it hard, unfortunately, to make progress on a lot of those issues this year. The closely divided nature of the legislature, the fact that we are facing uncertain budget times. I think people are rightfully at the Capitol hesitant to do anything that's going to either increase spending significantly or decrease tax collections. The license tab fee is one that I know has gotten a lot of attention. But the challenge with that is it's one of the main ways that we pay for our roads and bridges. And as we've seen a shift to electric vehicles, as we've seen even gas-powered vehicles get more efficient, the gas tax is bringing in less and less revenue. And as a result, we looked at tab fees as one of the ways that we can make sure that we're maintaining the roads and bridges. As a district that's got three main highways going through it, that's really important. It's one of the ways that we're paying for the big road construction project that's going to start this summer on Highway 65 here in Blaine. So that's why I think some of the things that are probably more likely to get done are incremental steps like this property tax task force that I'm proposing and working on with Chair Davids, because it'll work in the interim this summer and fall to make some recommendations for the legislature for us then to come back in 2027 and hopefully actually put some of those in place, those changes that they recommend in order to provide some pocketbook relief for families.
When you think about property taxes, one of the key parts of it is it's obviously driven by local government, schools, county, city. I've come to the theory that the truth in taxation hearing has become we're going to set the bar really high. In my local government, it was 17% this year, and then they got it down to 7%. And then they claim victory, but it's still a 7% increase. Is there anything like that that you specifically have talked to local officials about, or what's driving up local government costs that the state could help with?
Mm-hmm. There's a number of factors that are driving those local government costs. And I feel for our local government officials because they're left having to deal with a lot of the challenges that the federal government and the state government have pushed down to them. You know, one is just the overall cost of everything is going up. Just as inflation is hitting family budgets, it's hitting the budget of our cities, our counties, our schools. But then you look at things like at the federal level, the big legislation that they passed last summer, it cut a lot of the Medicaid funding and put in place new requirements for SNAP benefits, added additional cost sharing for SNAP benefits that then, you know, flows down to the counties. Here in Anoka County, that was about a 4% increase on the levy right there. And so it's challenging for our local government officials. And one of the other things that we haven't done at the state level is keep up the local government aid and county program aid. That's direct money that the state collects that then they send to the cities and the counties to help, you know, keep property taxes in line, and that has not kept up with inflation over the last two decades. And so as the counties and the cities and even our school districts are getting less aid from the state, one of the only other levers that they have to pull is property taxes. And so I think we need to look more holistically at what are the responsibilities we're putting on our local units of government and what are some of the tools we have in our toolbox here at the state level and ideally at the federal level to relieve some of that pressure.
When you think of other affordability issues, they're more on the macro level. The economy and then fraud start to have people wonder about, you know, whether or not they trust, frankly, state government with their tax dollars anymore. I know you've been a leader in the House for the Democrats on the Inspector General bill. Is there anything you think can get done on that bill yet this session?
I do. And people are right to be concerned about fraud. It is unacceptable. And we need to make sure that Minnesotans trust that when they send their hard-earned tax dollars to the state, that those dollars are going to be used responsibly. And for the things that I think a lot of Minnesotans support, things like helping kids with autism, helping low-income families pay for child care. And when people feel like they can't guarantee that, that is a problem that should be tackled head-on. And so that's why I have been working on a couple of different pieces of legislation to address the fraud issue. One of them, like you mentioned, is the Office of the Inspector General bill. I do think that there's a path to get that done this year. That's a great example of how we have in divided government been able to work across the aisle, Democrats and Republicans in both the House and the Senate, to really try to reach consensus on a big thorny issue. It doesn't mean that there aren't differences of opinion, and it doesn't mean that there aren't challenges that we have to work through. But I think when you look at the process that we've been going through over the last 16 months with that bill, it's one that should give Minnesotans a lot of confidence in the ability of the legislature to respond, where we started with actually two different bills that were going through the process in the House and the Senate. We've kind of coalesced around one bill. We're down to just a few key issues that still need to be resolved. And I think that there are ways, if everybody continues to keep their problem-solving hats on, there's a way we can get those final issues resolved and get something passed that should give help restore that confidence for Minnesotans in their state government.
Representative Matt Norris is my guest. We're talking about where we're at here as the legislature reconvenes this Tuesday, kind of at the halfway point, but it doesn't seem like they've gotten half their work done. So there's probably some cramming that needs to be done. I want to go back to that Inspector General bill, Representative Norris. One of the sticking points has been the autonomy and independence of that office compared to the governor's office. And obviously, it's not even about the current governor as much as it is future governors. Does it make it easier to find the independence and get that passed now that Governor Walz isn't running again?
I don't think so, because I think there was agreement from everybody involved in trying to draft this bill that it did need to be as insulated from political pressure as possible and as independent as possible. I think the challenge we've been working through is how do you do that within the bounds that the state constitution draws for us? You know, there is a 1897 Supreme Court case that makes it clear that if it is an executive branch position, the governor ultimately has to be the one to appoint that person. And you know, and even though that kind of became a political flashpoint earlier this session, everybody who was involved in drafting the legislation understood that that was the deal. There was some language, stray language that had gotten left in the Senate bill from one of the previous drafts that was causing some confusion about that. And so now that piece has been fixed in the bill. And because of that requirement, we've thought about what are other ways we can try to insulate that office from political pressure. So we do have a group of, the bill would establish a bipartisan group of legislators who would make bipartisan recommendations to the governor. They can't require the governor to select one of those people, but they would make recommendations, and I think there'd be a lot of pressure for the governor to pick one of those people. There's an appointment or a ratification process that they have to go through. They have to be approved by the Senate. There's protections to prevent the person from unnecessarily being removed from office for political reasons. So within the bounds of the Constitution, I think everybody's worked hard to figure out what are ways we can make sure that this office has the independence it needs to do its job effectively.
When we start to look at the end of the session, the things that need to get done, whether or not there's going to be a tax bill, whether or not the bonding bill is going to get done, do you feel as a second term member that there can be progress on bipartisanship after the break, after what was a ton of kind of posturing before the break of we're not going to give you votes for your stuff, you're not going to give us votes for our stuff. You also have an election year with all 201 seats up. What kind of progress would you like to see in the first couple days or weeks that you're back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as somebody who represents a very purple district and likes to just get in there and get things done, I don't care for the theatrics a whole lot. And, you know, it's unfortunate when that kind of gets all the headlines, because I do think that there's a lot of really good bipartisan work that's already happening behind the scenes and doesn't always get the headlines. And I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for us to work together in these final 6 weeks. I think there's some urgent issues that do need to be addressed. You know, I'd love to see a bonding bill. There's certainly a need for those sorts of projects all across the state. Even, you know, you look at so many small towns right now are struggling with water infrastructure. Those are things that everybody should be able to come together and make sure we can get done. HCMC, we clearly need to do something there. That's a statewide asset that we can't allow to fail. And I think the reality is, like in anything, deadlines have a way of you know, pushing people to actually come together and get the work done. And it seems like at the legislature, it's always a little bit slow going at the start. And then, you know, as that adjournment date starts to stare us in the face, people start to buckle down, the real conversations start to happen, and deals can come together pretty quickly.
Matt, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we'll talk down the line.
Great. Thanks so much, boys.
When we come back, this week's take. Welcome back to Sunday.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up, and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Take. I'm Blois Olson. A headline from the Minnesota Reformer this past week caught my eye. Measuring drapes for the trifecta. It's still only April. However, the way numbers look in a midterm with an unpopular president, now an unpopular war, an economy that is going to need to go on turbo boost, Republicans are going to have some headwinds. And so the suggestion that Democrats will get back a trifecta in St. Paul has many people wondering, what will that trifecta look like? What could it look like? And what other items would Democrats push too far on? There's a hearing this coming week on a wealth tax. That's something California has pursued and has caused people to leave California, not in small numbers, but in large numbers. It is easy to rant or recycle Minnesota's economic issues and challenges, and many of them came out this last week. But today's take is really about what to do in a trifecta if you're the Democrats, and why that should worry even Democrats. So one of the things that is clear is that in some ways, when people have power, they don't want to preserve political capital. This was the philosophy of the late Speaker Melissa Hortman, which Governor Tim Walz has leaned into. In Washington, the Big Beautiful Bill was similar. But the challenge there is that then the public has the ping pong ball of from one side to the other, when we know that the vast majority of voters are much more in the middle. They want compromise. They don't want extreme policy. And a trifecta can do that. Some of the things Democrats passed in the trifecta a few years ago are coming back. Some of them are on auto charge, like adjusting certain taxes, fees, and spending to inflation. Now, inflation isn't high, but costs continue to go up. Similarly, the mandates were there. So my counsel is, before we start measuring for the drapes, let's see what Minnesota actually needs to be the robust economy we have been, and where we need state government and local government to get more efficient and more cost effective. Democrats who are interested in policy and moderate should look there before those with the loudest voices in the DFL try to enact some sort of revenge tour of a trifecta. That would be bad for the state. It would be bad for policy. And it would further divide us in a time we need unity. I'm Blois Olson. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. You can always catch our stuff at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's The Take.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.